Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Thank you.
Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Fanfare for the Common Man from their fifth studio album, Works Volume 1, released in March 1977 and also as a single 2 months afterwards on Atlantic Records. The album peaked at number 9 in the UK album charts, number 12 on the US Billboard 200, and the single release reached number 2 in the UK singles charts. ELP.
Prog-tastic. Now, ELP, I saw them live on the Tarkus tour at the Empire in Liverpool. They were fantastic. Fantastic. Keith Emerson dumped a Hammond organ over the side of the stage. He had two. Right, M100 like we've got, that's what he used to use. He didn't use to see C3 or B3. He used an M100 like ours, and he dumped one over the top, and he put the knife in the keyboard to keep the keys down between the two. The full prog-tastic
the knife
experience.
That Lemmy gave him.
That's right, the very one. And the knife to keep the two keys down, he had his full Moog set up. It was absolutely unbelievable. And it's... Reading this, I didn't realise that this was the fifth album, because it was the last one I think they ever did together, really, because it was not a Works Volume 2. And the actual, it's self-indulgent nonsense, the rest of it, really, because I've got to say, the whole album is self-indulgent, because each one does a different side, like Keith Emerson does like a classical
Oh, that's
thing.
True, actually, yeah, they took it in turns
and
to
Greg
do.
Greg Lake. Having said that, some of the Greg Lake songs, I've got a lot of time for Greg Lake. You know, he was a great
Why
songwriter.
Why do you think they did that? Was it because you think they might be doing solo projects?
They were falling out.
Because, you know, when I saw Destiny's Child, they all did their own solo bit and then came together at the end and the beginning, as it were. But I'm just thinking, and they were splitting up. So this is why I was thinking, ELP,
Darling,
that's what they're doing.
Destiny's who?
Exactly. All the ladies.
No.
Independent.
Stop.
Absolutely.
Stop.
Anthemic.
This should not be on the show.
Absolutely.
Stop.
She's
immediately.
An icon.
Anyway, let's get back to some protesting. Because... What I love about that track is not obviously the opening thing, which was nicked from a not nicked, but it was a copy of a I can't remember who actually wrote it originally. Oh,
it was
Aaron Copland, 1942. Yeah, but when it goes into that solo bit, that shows Emerson at his absolute genius, because it builds up. And the sounds, he's using a Yamaha GX1, which was it was like a prototype, I think, that went on to be the CS, I think it was CS80, Stevie Wonder called his dream machine.
Right.
Songs for the Key of Life, he wrote.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of my favourite albums,
on that. But the sounds, I love that. Woo beep boo bee ba boo bee bop, and then ba 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 ba, and there's like distortion. It's just amazing piece of solo work.
Did you hear that bass as well going dun 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 dun? Well, it's like a few times in there.
Absolutely, and also the
yeah, I love that too. Cheeky.
You know something?
Yeah. What?
He played with a pick.
Oh, you could get stuffed. I did. Do you know? I looked up. I love the sound of that bass. I'm going to get the scissors out because there are four strings too many. He played an eight-string alembic bass through high watt amps. Mm. It's not funny. So there you go.
Well, that was John Paul Jones' thing, wasn't it? But the thing is that I think as a three-piece, that prog-tastic thing, you know, the
I
thickness
love that
of
prog-tastic.
The,
yeah, you sound like Smashy and Nicey.
But the bass really needed to be thick. And as I say, John Paul Jones, Led Zeppelin, used to use eight strings, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Where was this recorded? It was recorded at Mountain Studios.
It was.
Right, but who owned Mountain Studios later? Who bought it?
No, I don't have that information. Have you got... Do you know what? I knew I'd be in trouble today because you read the notes
after
before
last
the show.
After last week's embarrassment where I'm constantly being second-guessed by my wife, right? Yes, Queen bought it in 1979. A lot of the Queen records with them.
Really?
Yeah, and it's converted into a museum, I believe, now, and the benefit, the charitable donations from that go to the Freddie Mercury Trust.
Oh, right. Get you.
Yeah. And but
what?
Who else recorded at Mountain Studios?
Is this the one when all the press went out in a plane? And no, there's another story. There's
so many rock and roll
stories.
Uriah Heep.
Oh yeah,
no,
yeah.
This,
go on then.
I'll tell you who it was. It was David Bowie.
No,
he did Lodger there. And I think he recorded some bits Low there as well. Yes, I do believe so. So there we are.
Well, good.
And...
Oh, amazing.
But the other thing about that track...
It's a Montreux in Switzerland.
Yeah, that's right. Because it was actually in the old casino that burnt down. You know, Smoke on the Water?
Yeah.
It was, I think, when it was rebuilt, it was in there. Anyway.
I love these stories.
Yeah. But great place, Montreux. In fact, talking of Montreux, I was just chatting the other night to a guy I haven't spoken to for a long, long time, a guy called David Solari. And he's a great guy. He used to run Meyer Sound in Europe, and he was brilliant. And we took a real great boys' trip all the way down to Montreux, and I met Claude Nobbs and all that sort of thing in the... this is probably the late 80s, I think. But great, what a great trip.
Adventures,
yes.
In life and in music. This is the third best-selling instrumental track ever.
Come back home.
Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. Unbelievable. What a sound. White Palms from their debut solo album, BRMC, released on the 3rd of April 2001 on Virgin Records, recorded at Sound City, California. Nick Yeager on drums. Peter Hayes, formerly the Brian Jonestown Massacre, we'll talk about them in a minute, and Robert Levon Bean on bass.
You're very dramatic.
That bass, what a sound. I think he was using like a Gibson EB3, like Jack Bruce sort of thing. It's that sort of thing. But I've got to talk to you about this band before you... I know you haven't said anything yet about this.
I don't mind, by the way. You carry on,
sunshine. I went to see him at Leeds Festival. I saw him twice, actually. First time I went and my lads, or our lads, were there, James and Joe. They were kids, but like children. And I took James to the front, right on the front, and it was absolutely packed. It was sweaty, it was hot. They were ferociously loud. It sounded like that. What you're listening to there, that's what it sounded like. It was like, it was shaving your head, you know, it was like that loud. And about halfway through, all of a sudden, this body started crowd surfing across the whole thing, dumped into the front of the stage, and it was Joe.
No.
The technique from the back, yeah. He must have been only about, I don't know, 8. And me and James are at the front. We think, what's going on? And they ushered him backstage because he was dumped over the barrier. You know, I couldn't believe it.
What a
great gig, you know what I mean? None of us could hear for a week, but it was absolutely tremendous because we were right by, and the bass just sounded like that. And they were sweaty, and they were black, and they were hairy and a bit smelly, and it was just great, 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 great.
I don't know what to say now. Wow, I've got to say though, that bass sounds like. An elephant with a stuffed Trump or something, like, on LSD. Because it's just, it goes mad. I mean, that bass is just completely, the way he goes up, it's crazy. It's brilliant. I mean, the energy on that track is just phenomenal.
It's clunky, but, you know.
It is. It's not perfect.
No, but it's great. And it sounds like it's been kind of done in one take. But it was recorded at Sound City. And you know a little bit about this, don't you?
Well, what happened was when they got a record deal, they were in the middle of a bidding war when they first got offers from different labels. So they managed to get a deal where they actually produced their own music because they really were keen on doing the music they wanted to do and making it sound the way they did, not have anyone meddling with it. And so they got sent to, but they did get sent to Sound City studio in California. The very famous one that Dave Grohl did the documentary on with the Neve console. And the thing is, they couldn't work out for ages. They go, oh my God, you know, is this doing something wrong? They've sent us to this dingy, dark dungeon with vomit everywhere. And they were like, why are we here? And so obviously the studio was renowned for the Neve 8028 console.
Legendary.
And the big studio room was renowned for recording rock drums, as you know.
That's right.
But they didn't want to do that because they didn't want that big sound, because they wanted a more garagey sound. So they took the whole drum kit and went down the corridor and they recorded them in a hallway closet storage area instead.
Is that right?
Yeah. So because they didn't know the story. So really they recorded it at Sound City not for the reasons that you would record it at Sound City, if you know what I mean.
Well, Rage Against the Machine did their record there, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know, and that fantastic, virtually live, I think in front of a live audience as well, that first record they did.
I remember that. It was on that documentary, wasn't it?
It was in the Sound City documentary. And if you haven't watched the Sound City documentary, it's definitely worth watching. Even if you don't like anything about technical and recording consoles and stuff, it's really good because Dave Grohl's very engaging in it. And it's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they were saying, you know, how could you make a documentary about a piece of gear?
Yeah.
But really, when you think about it. And he did really well. I mean, his love for it was fantastic. I mean, do you know what I'm going to do, though? Because I don't really know this band that well. And obviously, you've seen them twice, so you've really absorbed the power of them going through your ribcage with that wall of sound.
We've got all the albums, I think.
Well, the thing is, what's happened to me, I have no idea, but my whole musical taste is evolving and changing, especially since I picked up the bass. I mean, there is stuff that I'm listening to now that I wouldn't have liked 15 years ago. Well, before I met you, it's all your fault.
Darling, what you got to remember, you are as loud and as fierce as Mr.
That's
Bean.
That's true, actually, because I just do what I do.
Very loudly. Anyway, just before we get on to the next track, Alex Petredis of The Guardian wrote that the album sounds like it lives in a dingy bedsit, really hates dance music and has trouble making conversation with girls.
Thank you.
Madison Cunningham, In From Japan, that's from her third studio album, Revealer, released on the 9th of September 2022 on the Verve Forecast record label. It won a Grammy for Best Folk Album this year, and her 2019 album was nominated for Best Americana Album in 2020. Madison Cunningham.
Bloody hell.
I know, we've just discovered her. What a voice.
Yeah, what I think is very interesting about a lot of the new music that we're listening to now is especially the more folky and sort of instrumental and acoustic stuff, is that the arrangements are quite different. They're quite, you know, shockingly obtuse. You yeah. know, like there, you know, you expect her to drop to the, I don't know which chord it is, but she hangs on a chord, it sort of stops, and then you expect it to go to another chord, but it doesn't, it hangs on. And it is really interesting the way that these are being put together now, these new songs, because it's no longer just about the song, it's definitely about the arrangement as well and the whole sound of it. And I mean, this was produced by Tyler Chester and Tucker Martin, who does Such and Stevens, The Decemberists, R.E.M., Beth Orton, First Aid Kit. And you can almost hear certainly some of the First Aid Kit stuff in.
Yeah, it was recorded at different places. I love the Sonic Ranch in Texas.
Sonic. Hi, let's go to the Sonic Ranch.
I love that, though. That's really, honestly, so, and the other one, Phantom Studios. These studios in Tennessee, great names, aren't they? It's
well,
like
they are.
Supertone.
Yeah.
We've got Phantom, Sonic, Ranch.
Welcome.
Well, it's really interesting as well, you know, because when you look into, you know, who is this lady? And she was born in California, daughter of a pastor in a local church. She started playing guitar at age 7. He was teaching her chords and stuff. But she released her debut worship album, Authenticity, in 2014. But she later removed it because it didn't feel that it was no longer relatable to her, because she's talking about her faith and saying that Christianity looks different to her all the time. And she says that the phrase she uses with her husband is, I'm becoming more and more of an agnostic every day. Mm. So you've got this young girl. And I didn't realise until I read an interview with her as well, that she suffered really badly from stage fright. And she spent years just trying to be the person she knows she is on stage, to feel comfortable with her stagecraft, to actually stand there and sing with her voice not all knotted up because she's, you know, tense or, you know, frightened, really. And I relate to that a lot, because I remember when I first started playing bass, it was a big thing for me, you know. I mean, I was used to singing, but, you know, when you've got a different instrument and then you're singing with a different instrument, I mean, and especially when I'm playing with you and you improvise all the blinking time, so nothing's ever going to be straightforward.
Correct.
It was shit. I was shit scared, actually. My first few gigs, it was. But then when you actually get through it and you just ride with the music, because I used to just disappear inside the music and go, oh, and that's when I'm okay, you know, when I'm not thinking.
And you're a natural musician, and you are, and you know, Madison is as well.
Oh, well, I've got to say, though, but I could really relate to her there. And she was saying, you know, that her influences are the Beatles, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, Radiohead.
Radiohead.
Fiona Apple and Jeff Buckley. And during the pandemic in 2020, she released an EP called Wednesday, and she covered songs from Radiohead, John Mayer, The Beatles, and Tom Waits. And it's interesting, you know, because when we've done the odd cover, we find that it's really kind of like she's saying, you know, you find something different in somebody else's music. You learn more about the art of songwriting just because you're playing another structure, another way of telling a story in the music. And I never used to be particularly into covers, but I can really see that that's and when you make it your own, it's a beautiful thing.
fierce. Tresommé 21, or T21, the last song from their second studio album, Chapter 4. Le, je ne sais quoi, et le presse, rien.
Brilliant. Rien.
Of course, I believe the I don't know what and the almost nothing. That's what the translation is. I've no idea what it means. I've no idea who this band is. All I saw the other day, I was on Mastodon, and because, I don't really know Mastodon, but it's like an alternative essentially to social media, Twitter type of thing. I saw this track, I listened to it, and I thought, wow, what a great song. And this is a great example of Cold Wave. And what is Cold Wave, i.e. genre of music?
Well, I've just looked it up.
No. Oh, thought I'd got you there.
Take that one, go on, Sebastian. Then. That's my French name. When we were living in France, I used to call you Sebastian.
Sebastian. Okay, come on. Cold Wave.
Well, so anyway, they're a French cold wave group.
Yeah.
Okay, just to set the context, formed in Lille, France in 1980 by brothers Philippe and Hervé. Now, I'd never heard of cold wave. It's a loosely defined music genre that emerged in Europe in the late 1970s, characterized by its detached lyrical tone, use of early electronic musical instruments, and a minimalist approach and style.
Almost a bit like The Fall. In a funny sort of way, because I really, really like that. So I love the echo on the bass. There's two versions of this on the web, because we don't have the vinyl. Usually, we don't have the vinyl of this.
We just found them.
We only found them last week, and there's a live version, and there's this one. And this, I thought the vocal was just slightly more in tune, but the live version is also very good. It was released on black and white vinyl with one side 45 RPM and the other side 33 and a third RPM. Now, that's going to really fuck up any DJ, isn't it? You know, can you imagine sticking on a bit of Tresommé 21 and all of a sudden it sounds like this. Yeah, anyway.
Well, the story goes as well. They just sent out one demo tape to an Amiens-based record company, Stachac. And they offered them the opportunity to record an EP, and that's what they did. It's crazy, you know, they're back together again, and they're touring.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So we've got Hervé Lompré on electronics, guitar and voice, Philippe Lompré, his brother, on vocals, and Laurent Dagenicourt on bass.
Wow, I love you, French.
Don't wind me up now. That's funny. But they were saying, like, with this band, they're like, you know, they're kind of captivating. And a little bit disturbing as well.
Yeah.
It's a bit, I'm not sure. You know, when they say it makes you feel cold, it's got like this depressed tone. It just feels monotone-ish, really. Just like.
I'd like to go and see them if they come to Portugal.
Really?
I think I'd definitely go and see them, yeah.
Oh, we should do it then.
But so, according to Tom Watson of Crack Magazine, the collective sound of Cold Wave was controlled yet colder. The most of their snotty predecessors, punk, but with a depressive groove. I'm gonna fight them all. I said the nation army couldn't hold me back. Time right behind my back.
The White Stripes, Seven Nation Army, from their fourth studio album, Elephant. Released on April the 1st, timely, in 2003 through a V2, XL and Third Man Records. The White Stripes.
Jack White. Great.
Megan White.
Great.
Great.
Yeah. She wouldn't play drums, though.
No, she was a novice drummer. But she played them differently, a bit like maybe reminds you of Mo Thompson from Velvet Underground.
Sucker.
So, what did I say?
Thompson.
Oh, no, did I?
That was a long-lost
sucker.
Sister.
Oh, that was a... I'm a banana head. Yeah, anyway.
Don't worry
I'm not really good on names, but I know what you mean. But sometimes, it's like, you know, when it's... When you play an instrument your way, it has character. And I love that. I love the fact that she plays her way.
Well, it is. I mean, the thing about the White Stripes anyway is that it's very rough and ready stuff. And Jack White likes to do stuff quick. He likes to just do it and record it, and that's it. He sort of does things in one take. He's, you know, he's a really cool guy. I mean, he's won 12 Grammys. So he must be doing something right. And it's amazing, his guitar sound. And what I love about that, because the studio, talk about the studio they recorded at first, Toe Rag Studios, which is an analogue studio in London, and they have an original EMI Red 17 console, which was originally at Abbey Road, and a Studio A80 tape machine. So they record everything to tape. It's really lo-fi. When you look at the studio, it looks like something out of the 40s, you know? And they've got a pair of Tannoy monitors, which are very similar to the ones that we've got in our studio here. And it's really about the vibe and the sound that they create. And listen to that bass at the beginning. It's like, it's everything's super compressed. They're pushing the tape really hard. It's really, really, it's just a very alive sound. I remember listening for the first time in the early 2000s, and it was amazing. It just jumped out the speakers. Because nothing sounded like that, you know? Nothing sounded like the White Stripes.
And they looked different because they had this monochrome thing, didn't it? Was it the red, the black and the white? That's all they ever dressed in. Do you know why they were called the White Stripes?
You've put a question mark here, and therefore you know something I don't, carry on.
I can't risk writing at the notes just in case you read it again.
Risk writing, okay.
That's because Megan liked the stripes in the peppermint candies.
No.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, they
how cool is that?
That's really, really
and
cool.
And what was really interesting is that Jack White is actually John Anthony Gillis. And when they got married, he took Megan's surname.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, that's why he's Jack White.
Wow.
Well, it's funny, I've got a friend called John, but I call him Jack. And this is John, and he's Jack. And it's just great. So I love that because it reminded me of, you know, when we got married and the lady said, welcome, please welcome Mr. and Mrs. Starlight.
Indeed, yeah.
It's like, you should have taken my name, darling.
Well, you know something, I have thought about it. No. Simon Starlight. Yeah. Anyway.
So this band, though, they've won 3 Grammy Awards. I know Jack's won 12 differently with different musical setups, but they've won the Best Alternative Music Album Grammy 3 times.
Is that right?
And I love their energy. You're right, though. I need to listen to more of this band because I suppose in a way part of me just thinks, oh, they, you know, because the thing is, Megan didn't really, she had stage fright. She found it really, again, really, really hard playing live. And I think that's when her nerves got her and they cancelled the tour at one point. And, you know, and I just think, oh, I really, there's so many, many bands I need to get into my blood. Because when I hear that, it gets you going, doesn't it?
But when you talk about going on stage with stage fright, I don't think he actually cares. He just does what he does and he freaks out and he just goes. I've seen them live and they were great.
You've seen them live as well?
Of course I have, yeah. And they're really, really, it was just full of energy, but 2 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, to create that racket on stage, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of fuzz.
Get in there.
And he's made a pedal through our friends at Game Changer Audio, and it's a Third Man Records, because that's his record company, pedal. And it's a plasma pedal that we've got in the studio here.
Yeah.
And so we're all Game Changer artists, and they make some really, really cool stuff. But Jack, he's always doing great stuff.
But you know, it's really weird as well, because I read an interview with him, and he said his life could have turned out differently. I got accepted to a seminary college in Wisconsin and I was going to become a priest. But at the last second I thought, oh, I think I'll just go to public school, because he'd just gotten a new amplifier in his bedroom and they didn't think he was allowed to take it with him.
Well, there we are, Jack White the priest. That would have been quite something. Lamb Chop, Little Black Boxes, from their 16th studio album, The Bible, released on the 30th September 2022 on Merge Records. But Lamb Chop really is about one bloke.
Called Kurt.
Kurt.
Wagner.
Yeah, or is it Wagner? I don't know, darling.
From Nashville, baby.
Yeah.
Tennessee.
Amazing. I mean, I've listened to Lamb Chop on and off over the years, and a very, very eclectic band. And this record, the whole record, The Bible, is such a mix. It really is. You know, it goes from really baroque moments and, you know, to some really acoustically, it's beautiful. It really is a great record. And this is the only track that's like this on the record, and that's why we chose it, really. Some fearsome guitar playing and bass playing on there. But it's out on Bandcamp, and I had a look, and all the credits are on there, but there's about six bass players on there, so I don't know who's playing on this particular track. And guitar players, no idea. But the drum machine. And what I like about it is the fact, from a production aesthetic, it sort of sounds so 70s, sort of so early 70s.
Sounds flares,
but then he's got, yeah, but then he's got a vocoder, and then there's that fearsome bass, you know, that real thick electronic bass that is like a very modern sound. And it started as a jam, though, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was... It was some time around COVID time, and there's a guy called Andrew Broder who's a pianist, and Kurt had met him years ago in a studio, and he saw Andrew was just playing live, improvising late at night on Instagram, and he just got in contact, and they ended up kind of working together. And then you've got Ryan Olson, who owns Creation Studios up in Minneapolis, and what happened was that Kurt's dad was ill, so he was thinking about, I think, you know, facing one's own mortality, looking after his dad who had COVID, and then he had a stroke, and then he had operations on a hip. And
blimey.
And he's thinking about 3 decades in the music industry, and what does he do now? Is it worth making music anymore? And where's the meaning? And all these things came together, and they started off, and it's very much a trio of equal collaboration.
Right.
And it's co-produced by the three of them. This is the first time, I think, that Kurt's really opened up. And creatively in that way, which is exciting, isn't it?
Fantastic.
I think that's really lovely.
Great record. But that's it. That's the end of the show for this week. Remember, you can catch us next week. And, of course, each week we release a blog.
We do,
article,
indeed.
Yes.
And it's called Vibes.
Vibes. Vibes.starlight-campbell.com. That is the web address. You can find it there. Subscribe. We talk about all sorts of things, music and
yeah, we take it in turns. But it's like, so this last one is, what does it mean to be punk? And it was just about attitudes and stuff, and about, you know, it's never too late for your dreams, you know. If you want to do something, get on and do it, you know.
And I'm not going to tell you what the next one is.
Oh, no, because... So anyway, this next week, there will be a new one out, written by the scribe himself, Simon Campbell. But, yeah, so there's Vibes, and obviously this show, which is a weekly show, syndicated all around the world at the moment as well.
It is, yeah. It's
very
amazing.
Exciting.
More and more people are taking it, which is really great.
I know, it's so, like from Kansas to London town, as it were. So if you want to get in touch with us, it's hello@starlight, that's LITE-campbell.com. Let us know what you think of the show, if you've got any tracks that you'd love us to feature. And we'll leave you this week with a quote from Kurt himself, who said, "I want to keep a certain amount of integrity about myself as I age, but explore and push for new things I haven't heard. It's about looking forward instead of backward."